So the second thing they can do is seize the property, and they do it before a hearing. We think that's illegal, and we're going to go after them on that. The third thing they can do is issue a notice of apparent liability. That's how they started out with Stephen and with San Francisco Liberation Radio. That's how they started with Mbana Kantako. That's what they used to do. They write a letter and they say, you're a bad person, we're fining you $20,000. You talked to your community on a one-watt station, you didn't get a license. People write back and say, well, either I did or I didn't, or prove it, or whatever the answer is going to be. They come back with the answer. We have an answer that was about a 20-page single-spaced answer that we sent them when they gave us the notice of apparent liability. They then file a response to that saying, no, we're right, you're wrong, what we did was correct, pay us the money. They then say, though, that you don't even have standing to challenge that, because until they try to attach it, until they go into court and say, give us the money, you don't have standing. That's their argument. That's that technobabble I was describing to you. I mean, there's no substance to what they do, right? And they never go in to collect the money. Mbana has had a $750 fine for, I think, it's 9 years now. They never go into court. Now, Mbana doesn't believe that the FCC has a right to control the airwaves at all. He says it's like the air. And once you give them the right to control the air, they're going to do like that movie where they put you underground and let you eat the dust and the toxics while the healthy people get the clean air, where the rich people get the clean air, you know. He says, I'm not going to let you regulate the airwaves. These are my airwaves. Now, it's good if you can get away with it. The FCC hasn't wanted to touch him. Can you imagine having to go after a blind African-American man who's the only person in the entire area of Springfield that speaks to his people? I mean, the idea of the political bath they take if they try to go after Mbana is so blatant that they haven't done it. You know, they just haven't even done it. But they can send this notice of apparent liability when they finally come back and say, no, we're right, you're wrong. You can then appeal that with a petition or an application. I mean, the regulations are so confusing, you can't tell which. We filed both. We didn't know which we should call it. Because if you're appealing it, it's one thing. If you're asking for review of it, it's another thing, and yet they both are challenging the same thing. So we filed both. They sat on that for 18 months before they went in to Stephen with the fourth thing that they can do. And the reason that the notice of apparent liability doesn't work much anymore is people are less intimidated. People, frankly, don't care. A whole lot of people are tired of not being able to talk, not being able to hear what's going on, and they're willing to take the chance. So the notice of apparent liability isn't scaring people anymore. I mean, I would not recommend, if you own your own house, getting a notice of apparent liability for $100,000, but most of the people that are putting out micro radio stations don't have $100,000. Or they might even apply for a license. But after they go through the notice of apparent liability, if they're ever going to answer it or if they're ever going to try to attach it, the only other thing that they can do is seek an injunction. They did that once. And they got so burned on it that I don't think they're going to try to do that ever again. I mean, the precedent that's being set in Stephen's case shakes them to their roots, you understand. For the first time, you know, Silverman, their lawyer, was correct. Why, Judge, this has never been done before. You can't do this. You're going to create chaos. It's not chaos to have, you know, 130 easy listening stations that say nothing. It's chaos to have some people getting up there and talking to each other in a community. That's chaos as far as the FCC is concerned. Alexander Coburn's article on that was wonderful, a wonderful analysis of what's chaos and what's not. Oh, it appeared in The Nation, and it appeared in a wonderful paper called the Anderson Valley Advertiser, put out by Bruce Anderson in Mendocino. Actually, it's not Mendocino, it's Boonville. Yeah?
Well, what I was going to do is the tax payer's analysis of harassment tactics, going to the landlord and things like that.
Yeah, well, but that's a different sort of thing. What they did against Napoleon Williams, what they've done with a lot of people with Mbana, is they don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole as far as the communication stuff is concerned. They look so bad and evil doing that. So instead, they go after them for welfare violations or for not paying their rent or for, you know, crazy things like that. But that's not an FCC action. That's happened in more places than one. Some people think antennas are ugly and that they don't want them in their community. Other people think that they don't have any trouble with the stations until it says something, you know, that happens to push their button, you know. They have a show that's not homophobic and the people get real offended, or they have a show that says prisoners aren't the devil, you know. I mean, juvenile crime in this country is down 30%. Would you know that from the public media? I mean, from the public media, you would think that kids are doing nothing but going around marauding and murdering. It's down 30%. Statistics like that people like Vinnie Schiraldi or the, you know, Criminal Justice Consortium or people have are absolutely silenced until you have vehicles for people to talk to each other about some truth and reality. Now, what do you do if you're going to do a station and you decide you want to try to avoid getting a $10,000 fine against you? You want to avoid having all your property seized and all that kind of stuff. My recommendation is go onto our website and download, or have your, whoever can read that, that kind of legal nonsense, read the briefs and the legal arguments that have been made so that you will know at least the theoretical basis upon which you're defending yourself. Secondly, go to whoever the best lawyers in your community are. I don't know who they are. Hopefully they would be Lawyers Guild people who would have some politics. A lot of places they aren't. Not in Southwest Texas. Not in, you know, the Valley in Eastern Washington. Not in a whole lot of the places where micro radio stations are going. Go to the ACLU. Go to First Amendment lawyers. Go to whatever lawyers want to make a name for themselves as good lawyers. It doesn't matter. Go to the lawyers and explain, look, don't worry about having to learn a new area of law. Nobody knows this area of law. There is no area of law in this area. The only law that exists since 1934 belongs to the commercial corporations. That's why the FCC doesn't know how to deal with us. It's like, remember in Star Wars, they knew how to deal with great big battle stations. They didn't know how to deal with a single little fly. Well, that's what the micro radio stations represent to them. They're not commercial competition. They're not saying we want a slice of your economic pie. They're people saying we're Americans who want to talk to each other over public airwaves. They don't even know how to think that through because it's been 60 years since they had to justify this. So that find lawyers that are willing to understand that and willing to learn what the law is at this point, who can go in and neutralize the FCC and its arm in your community. If you're not doing organizing in your community where you don't have enough support from local people, from what you're saying and what you're doing, then I'd spend some time doing that first. Because you're not going to get legal people or anybody to sort of support you or give a darn about what you're doing if there's nobody that cares about what you're doing. I can promise you, though, that if you have the kind of outreach that they have in Lawrence, Kansas, you're going to get all kinds of people on your side, from the city council to the local police. The police support the micro radio stations in cities all over this country right now because it's those stations that are assisting them with public announcements and public information that they couldn't conceivably get off some Modesto station that sends its message out, you know, 100 miles through San Francisco and Sacramento and plays nothing. I mean, local people don't benefit from that kind of station. And you would be amazed at the potential allies you have. So I would get your legal people online before you get busted. Don't call us and say, hey, I got busted and I'm in Wichita. I mean, I don't know what to do in Wichita, you know. We take an economic bath. Our people don't have money. That's why they're doing micro radio. That's why Stevens Engineering Designs are so important. Because we don't have money. I was what Abby Hoffman called a child of the 60s, right? You know, I grew up when there were movements of people that supported each other. We supported our lawyers. We supported our alternative doctors and midwives. We figured out ways of supporting those people so that they could be part of our system. And they could be mechanics, and they could practice law, and they could have the various skills that we needed for our movement. But we also had tens of thousands of people. And you're facing a whole period of, you know, decades of having no access to the media and no organizing going on, in many ways outside of this movement. This movement is probably as broad as any political movement in this country today. Do you realize? I mean, I don't think people realize their own power and their own seriousness. 10,000 calls to the FCC saying, we want to set up this station. That they acknowledge. They acknowledge shutting down 100 people last year. They don't acknowledge that half of them reopened a week later. You know? They don't acknowledge how many stations there are, but they acknowledge the 100 people they've had to close down and the 10,000 calls. And I assure you there's more. Because I know, because we get so many emails a day and so many calls a week that we basically can't even deal with them. And that really, in one way, answers your questions. We can't deal with it. You've got to organize just the way you're going to organize people who have the skills. If your transmitters have distortions and harmonics, if they have spurs, you're going to have to find people with the technology to show you how to do it right. It doesn't do you any good. If you're interfering with a 1,000-watt station and you've got a 1-watt station, they aren't going to hear you next door, right? I mean, you all know how FM works. The big station totally drowns out. You know, the FCC tries to make it sound like the bigger one and the small one are sort of going to, you know, meet halfway across town and not fight with each other. That's not how it works. The big station drowns out the small station. It's that simple. Micro radio broadcasters have much more interest in having a clear, clean signal. We're not the ones that are going to be hitting airspace and air traffic control and security devices. We're not the ones that are going to be interfering. A 100,000-watt station does. That never gets listened to or monitored by the FCC because the FCC run, you know, they run the FCC. I mean, who is it that really is going to do the kinds of violations they're talking about in a meaningful way? It sure ain't the mosquitoes, you know. It's very intimidating to have marshals knock on your door and take half of your property. It's very intimidating. The fact that people might get it back somewhere down the line or that the FCC might have broken the law is not a great incentive to a lot of people to continue doing it anyway. There are people who are going to do it and who are going to think it through, who are going to limit their liability. They're not going to say, yeah, we're a collective of 35 people, and here's our names. They're going to say, all right, here's the front person. You want the person responsible for the station? It's me. That person, and get someone who's, you know, judgment-proof. You know, if someone shows up at your house with a warrant to seize your property, my advice is let them do it. Okay? I practice criminal law. I represent people on death row. If you're asking me whether people should pick up a 2x4 to stop police coming in from their home, my advice is no. You let them in. Now, I'm not going to say that's what everybody should do. Those are your choices. But I sure am not going to advise you to physically fight the police on it. It's what they do now. They come into your house, right? Somebody says, I think that person's dealing drugs. So, you know, and I'm a reliable informant, whatever that is, right? There's a contradiction in terms, you know. A reliable informant has told me that this person's dealing drugs. Okay, the police break down your door. They take everything in the house. Maybe they plant drugs. Maybe they don't. Maybe you got drugs in the house. I don't know. But they can do that and not have to justify it until years later when you're tried and you then file your motion to suppress. And you say, these thugs didn't have a reliable informant. They planted the stuff. And the judge says, oh, no, I believe the police. Why would they lie? Now, you know. Again, that's where you get into the whole question of how do social movements change the law? You know, who makes the law? The people in power make the law, right? Usually to protect their interests and their rights. That's what the law says. It says, we have a right to do this. People sometimes reach a point where they say no. Women said, we have a right to vote. We don't care that the Constitution won't give that to us. Black people said, we're not 3/5 of a human being. We're more. We'll fight you for that. Who wins or loses? I mean, people lost for many years on whether they were 3/5 of a person, right? We laugh at that now. There are grandfathers of children that you know who were slaves, who were 3/5 of a people legally in this country. I mean, things do change. And the question of whether people have a right to take to the air legally, I think, is a question of power. When you look at the Telecommunications Act and what they're supposed to be doing, they aren't even approaching it. They don't even have a cover for it. They can't justify it in court. They get up in court and argue procedure. They didn't say A, B, C, D, and E. They don't get up and say, we'll give the airwaves to whoever we damn well please. They don't say that. How can they say that? Right? How can they say it's legitimate to let 3 corporations control over 60% of the market in half the cities in this country at the same time as they're arguing spectrum scarcity? It is such hypocrisy, they cannot afford to sit in a courtroom and say that with a straight face. They have to assert power over truth. And that's what the law is about. Okay? I mean, I don't want to mislead you. That's what the law is about. And people change the law through social action. And the micropower movement is one of them. We didn't ask the FCC to take us to court. We just asked to be able to broadcast. And we did. Well, I think that the process of legal change is a process of social change. That's what I started out saying. That I think the law reflects power relationships in the society. The first woman who said, I want to vote, got arrested and jailed. It wasn't like she won, you know. She got jailed. It was illegal. I mean, so the question of why don't we go into court and win and assert our rights is because no judge is going to have the judge who rules. You know, if some judge ruled against the FCC for us at the district court level, they'd figure out a way to get the judge voted out, even though you're not allowed to vote for federal judges. I mean, they'd figure out some way of getting that judge out, and the judges know that. So that the process, but if you have 150 people in a courtroom and everybody in the city coming and saying to this judge that's got to come into town every other day, what are you doing? These are the people we want to hear. The judge has a very different attitude. And the way you win and how often you win depends on the kind of political reality that is created in a nation. And if you look at the union history of this country, you look at every single important struggle, you will see that the law shifted when the public consciousness had already advanced well beyond any kind of legal definition. The panel that the NAB wanted to have this time really was a panel on which they were going to address, there's four people speaking, myself, two FCC enforcers, and an NAB lawyer who's going to explain why he's going to oppose on behalf of the telecommunications industry the 1-watt transmitters, right? That's the panel that they have. Last year they had a panel in which no micro radio people spoke, and half the people that got up at the meeting spoke in our favor. I think this year they wanted a target. I think this year they thought they'd do better because when there wasn't a target, their own people got up and said, look, folks, can't we really, you know, allow them to speak to each other? So that I think that concept is really at the heart of what you're asking. The FCC is an enforcement agency, but it has never had to deal with an uprising. It has never had to deal with a mass uprising. The notices of apparent liability that they used to send out used to stop it all. People said, oh my God, a $10,000 fine, I'm out of here, right? That doesn't work anymore. So all of a sudden, these agencies that have one or two or three local agents have to figure out how to shut down 25 stations, and every time they shut them down, another 30 open up. And so they're sitting there trying to figure out, what do we do? We're not a police department. We don't have, you know, agents everywhere to go around and bust people and harass them. So they try to do big, visible public stunts to convince people that they're doing something, right? That's why they're having this panel. They're going to have Richard Lee get up there and say, listen, folks, we haven't been ignoring your calls. We know you've called us 400 times and sent us every tape that Stephen Dunifer's ever on, and he's still on the air. We're not ignoring your pleas. Here's what we're doing. Please forgive us. Really, that's what this panel is for. That's what they're going to do tomorrow. We're going to get up there and try to talk to people about why the NAB should be supporting us. I don't know if we're going to convince anybody, but it sure is worth it to try at least. I mean, they should understand this. You know, there'll be some of them, you know, they're not the owners. They're not the greedy damn owners. They're just people who are working there. It's their children who don't have a voice in this country. Some of them are going to think this through and say, we really ought to figure out how to reconcile these two needs. So that the fact that it's not an enforcement arm and has never really been a police department is why they've been so ineffective historically. The breadth of the micro-radio movement and its power and its visibility and its credibility has really hurt them. The Wall Street Journal article came out and they started mass busts. The NAB went nuts when the Wall Street Journal came out. It was making us sound like good guys. How could these criminals and pirates sound like good guys? When I said to them at this NAB thing, I said, you got four men talking at this panel. Why don't you have some women? How about some micro broadcasters coming on to this panel? Oh, no, they're criminals, and we won't have criminals speaking. Can you believe that? I mean, that's their answer. I mean, what kind of mentality says, no, we can't have criminals speaking at it? I mean, God. But the point is, there have been articles. Covert Action Quarterly, Larry Soley, put out an article, and he's writing a book about this stuff that's a fascinating book that would be a real supplement to the Seizing the Airwaves. That book has a whole history and analysis of the international micro-radio movement, clandestine movements that existed in Nazi Germany and in various places around the world, and it's a fascinating international history of how and why radio is used. The second thing you ask is why the Complaint Bureau? It's because, I mean, think about the concept of an agency that has never had to be a police force before getting 10,000 calls in a year. That's why they set up a Complaint Bureau. They set up these things to try to have a cover and a front. It's a public relations group. I mean, when you call the FCC and people are saying, my God, there's this micro radio station in my community, I'm telling you about it, I'm taping their shows and you're not doing anything, they got to have someone pretty slick answering it. Because if they just have some fool saying, hell, we don't know what to do, you know, I mean, that gets the, you know. But again, the NAB is the agency that started threatening the FCC. If you don't pass this Telecommunications Act and support us on it, we're going to shut you down as an agency that's not necessary. I mean, I don't know any lobbying organization in the country that has that kind of power to wage that threat like that. I mean, maybe it's a threat, and maybe they couldn't have done it. But the idea that it was public and that the FCC is still catering to them is astounding. So that they have basically a public relations office. Now, Richard Lee would say, Hyken's cynical. That's not a public relations office. This is our enforcement arm. Why look at Tampa Bay? I mean, you judge for yourself in terms of what you read and what you see going on, whether the FCC is winning the battle of closing down micro radio stations. If that were true, why is the FCC about to legalize certain tiny little exceptions to it? They've got to. They've got to save face on some level. They have taken a bath in the media. Everybody that has talked about the difference between commercial speech and democratic dialogue, democratic communications, we win that argument. It's a Dracula principle argument. When that argument sees the light of day, we win, they lose. They've got to cover that up. Okay? The third thing is, how do you deal with the local harassment? That's not a legal question. That's a political question. Every successful movement in the history of the country has had to deal with what you're raising. The first time they busted Napoleon, it was for spouse abuse. The next time they busted Napoleon, it was for child neglect. They never mentioned the fact, oh, by the way, he's also got a micro radio station that we can't figure out how to shut down. No, they went after him for one nonsense thing after another, divided the community, women saying, wow, is it really spousal abuse? We don't want to support this guy. Other people were saying, you have that kind of division, a divide and conquer strategy. It's trite. I mean, it's trite how often they do it and how effective it is during certain periods of history and how totally ineffective it is during others, right? I mean, there are, you know, well, that's a long answer as to how do you deal with the abuse of political authority. You know, how do you deal with that? You can only deal with that with community organizing and education and letting people know, you know, what a coincidence that the person they're now accusing of spouse abuse happens to have a micro radio station that they never did anything about. And I can give you, just the way you mentioned that it's a local problem and it's always uniquely directed towards whoever the target is. I mean, there are books being written now about COINTELPRO, the Geronimo Pratt case, the Asada Shakur's case. There are cases about COINTELPRO that are really educating people as to what the process is that they accomplish that kind of divide and conquer thing. No one's ever been prosecuted for what they acknowledge is a COINTELPRO. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, in the Judy Berry case, we are urging people to file an FOI request for what agencies engage in the espionage. What agencies do we ask these records for? It's going to be some Iowa City Police Department that's going to be the spying arm, in the Redwood Forest. I mean, they hide it every time. I would ask anybody, there are people around the country who are starting to fight these things, who are raising the pleadings, who are fighting everything from the seizure to the threats of arrest, to the notice of apparent liability. If you would send us copies to our office, we would either put them on our legal website or at least we can make them available to people. So I would ask all of you who are doing that to please send us, please copy us on stuff. I mean, but the fact is that at the last NAB conference, KFOG got up and said, I got to say, There were two things they were trying to say. Some people started to say, well, you know, they're going to wander all over the dial and they're going to interfere with everybody and airplanes will fall out of the sky. And one of the engineers got up and said, look, I know Dunifer. He's a real good engineer. He doesn't build stuff that happens to, so that's not really a good argument. He was honest. I mean, they have legal translators. Those are 10-watt stations. Nobody's saying that those 10-watt stations cause airplanes to fall out of the sky, you know? So it's not that the technology creates it. If they're saying there are people who abuse it and don't know how to, you know, turn their typewriter on or their computer on, they're right. There are idiots in this world who can't do that stuff and are going to make mistakes, which is why we say, let people register with you so that if there's some kind of problem, you can let them know. But that doesn't mean you have to charge them $100,000 to have a license. All it needs is a postcard that says, here's the station I'm going on, and when, and where, and how. And, you know, I'm going to leave a couple of these here that have, Stephen's been circulating sort of a suggested approach to how to, you know, answer the FCC's one watt but no content suggestion. Well, one watt's not only not enough. I mean, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to throw the SOP and not really respond to the problem, and it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. The other points would be to make sure you have some community support. Make sure you have people who know what you're doing, and make sure you don't have 43 people who are going to be subject to liability. Try to limit it and try to make it whoever's judgment-proof. I've done that on behalf of a series of stations. Up in the Northwest, there's a Korean community of about 100,000 people, 50,000 of whom are monolingual Korean. There is no station that speaks to people in Korean. This guy strung a series of 10, 15-watt transmitters from, you know, up and down that area, covering the entire community. The FCC wrote him a letter and said, hey, you're broadcasting without a license. We answered and said, he tried to do this financially through your process and couldn't accomplish it. Now there's these 50,000 people that have to listen to a Los Angeles Korean station that's shipped up there that's got nothing to do with their community. This is the only voice that these people have. Are you going to let them broadcast or not? He was on the air for a couple of years and they never did anything, and then he shut down for other reasons. But they never answered it. And I've done that for a series of stations where we felt that the Dracula principle was at work, where they would be so embarrassed to have to justify why they silenced this voice. Native Americans don't write back and forth to each other. Many of them, especially in the outlying reservations, speak only their native language still. There are no stations for those people to talk to each other over. Radio is the perfect technology for those areas. A one-watt station ain't going to do it. It'll barely go between houses. But there aren't any radio stations in some of those areas. That should be a right that those people have. Plus, they have tribal rights and treaty rights that might make it very difficult for the FCC to figure out whether, you know, who has jurisdiction over what. Those people ought to, every single tribe that has that situation has a right to have radio transmissions for their people. There are a lot of people who would suggest that there's a lot of communities that are like that. The Mission District in San Francisco, you could have 6 or 7 stations that speak only the language of Filipino or Tagalog. I mean, there's a series of languages that people need access to, but they don't. Very simple to do it. They don't need another station from Modesto sending them nonsense in order to sell beer and caravans. They do need a station that talks to them about how do you deal with health care. Tuberculosis is now a disease that's come back. It's in our prisons. It's in third world communities. Does the FCC do anything about it? Does the NAB do anything about it? No, not their kids. You know? That is a problem that people have to have access to communications to deal with. So my feeling is you do the kind of research that you need. You build the support you can. You get your legal team together if you can. If it's an appropriate situation to write a letter like that, because you really are providing a unique kind of service in a community that doesn't have it, absolutely. It's not like if you're effective that the FCC isn't going to know you're there. What I usually say to people is if you're going to go on the air 3 or 4 times, don't bother to do anything. They're not going to bother you. If you're going to go on the air regularly and have the community know you're doing stuff, you are absolutely certain that they're going to contact you. There is no way in the world they're going to allow people to effectively speak in their communities, giving a voice to people in their community, and not come down on you. The commercial broadcasters can't afford that. Because even though in some areas they're acknowledging that they're cutting into our listening audience, what they said last year was, as a matter of fact, they're not cutting into our audience. We're doing better financially than we've ever done. Yeah, so that for them, they're going to have a hard time in court showing the economic harm. They're going to have a real hard time showing that.
Our problem is we have about $800,000 putting clear property at our church. That's really
how can you?
There's like a comment on this thing of the community involvement and support. I mean, one of the best things you can do is do mobile broadcasts. I mean, in addition, if you are doing regular microstation, is actually be out there in the community to build that support. By doing that, you can have a transmitter at special events, demonstrations, rallies, where it may be, 4th of July picnic, barbecue, whatever's happening in the community. You can be there with a small 6-watt transmitter like one over here and, you know, broadcast in that range. And if you're doing those sort of hit and run, this special event broadcasts, it's very unlikely that they're going to really come down on you. I mean, you take that with a grain of salt or a Siberian salt mine somewhere along that spectrum. But generally, we found that's actually been a very effective way of building that support. And I think the micropart community needs to look at that as more well, it's not really a legal response, but it's part of this building the framework for the legal and the other struggle within the court of public opinion. And this thing about disasters has been perfect. Situations, people who are doing micro broadcasting, if there are, you know, situations where a tornado or hurricanes, whatever, fires come in and devastate communities, I would, you know, be on that road in 24 hours with a portable transmitter setting up an information station in that community where it was hit to provide that information. In fact, they did that in Florida where the tornadoes came through. 3 micro stations devoted their programming for several days to aiding people devastated by that severe weather. So it's not a legal defense, but it certainly, you know, builds you incredible community support. And the whole point is to demystify the technology, show that you can sit there with a small box of parts and cover, you know, 5-10 miles with it and provide a valuable community service.
You know, as I look around this room at these great T-shirts, you know, the, you know, Black Liberation Radio and Free Radio Berkeley and Santa Cruz and these various shirts and the books, Season of the Airwaves. I think of the NAB. I don't know if you've all gone over to that convention site. They have what they call NAB stores, right? Fox T-shirts, you know. NBC Sports. I didn't know there was NBC Sports. I mean, you know, they have all the, you know, it's enormous. It is a veritable shopping mall over there. And I was thinking it's too bad they don't have our stuff. It's much more beautiful and classy, I think. You know? People like Kenny Cockrell and Sheila Murphy. I mean, there's organizers in those cities, in those areas, and a history and a tradition of people organizing in the union movement in Michigan. There's areas in which that movement doesn't exist. For instance, the entire South. Other areas, people are much more isolated. To get 30 people to go out to various intersections would be real difficult. There aren't 30 people. But for areas in which there's that kind of background and base and history, absolutely that's the way to do it. If you can win the hearts and minds, you're going to win the court decisions. Every lawyer knows that's ever done any people's law whatsoever. If you have a court, the difference between right now going in and trying to fight what they're doing to immigrants in California, the difference between now and doing it when the Farm Workers Union was strong and those courtrooms were filled with people is night and day, night and day. And all I can say is that you are part of a movement. Well, again, the number that the FCC puts out is 10,000 calls for people saying, we want to do it. So you realize that what you're talking about, you got truth and justice on your side anyway. If the law's not there, it'll soon follow. All right, I've been going on a long time. I think, thank you to the extent you were waiting for me to talk, thank you.